Good evening, everyone. I'm Tom Lounges, and it's time for Midwest Beats, the program all about music and the people who make it. Thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio on 89.1 FM, streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Coming up in just a few minutes, a certifiable rock and roll and blues legend, Mr. Elvin Bishop. He's got a brand new album called 100 Years of Blues with Charlie Musselwhite on Alligator Records. We'll feature it, and we'll talk to Elvin. But first, let's listen just a little bit to an early classic from 1975. Strutting his stuff, Elvin Bishop on Midwest Beat.
I'm strutting my stuff, y'all. 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 You all might like to hustle. In Atlanta, ain't nothing but a Georgia peach. Strutter the stuff all the way down to West Palm Beach. I'm strutting my stuff, y'all.
Every day, every night, y'all.
I'm strutting my stuff, y'all.
Watch me work out one time, people.
I'm strutting my stuff, y'all.
Hey, 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 hey.
I'm strutting my stuff, y'all.
That takes you back to 1975 to reintroduce you to classic rockin' Elvin Bishop, Strutting My Stuff, 1975. But you know what? Elvin is not resting on laurels. No, sir. He is still out there. 45 years later, he's still doing it. Here's a brand new cut from the new album, 100 Years of Blues. It teams up Elvin and Charlie Musselwhite. We'll get Elvin on the phone after this. Check it out. New stuff on Alligator Records.
Hey, here we are, birds of a feather, whole bunch of blues lovers gathered together, fixing to get loose, have a good time, like Brother Charlie says, I ain't lying, so clap, stomp, holler and yell, we're all friends here, so what the hell? Like everybody's having a ball. Does my heart good to see folks enjoy the show. So buckle up, people, away we go. You can listen to any kind of music you choose, but man, it's pretty hard to beat the blues. Me and Bob are playing just as good as we can, and here comes Charlie, he's a dangerous man. Thank you.
You hear that harp? You know it's got to be Charlie Musselwhite, and that voice is unmistakable. That is, of course, Elvin Bishop. We started out earlier at top of the hour with a little taste of Strutting My Stuff from his Capricorn years, 1975. And 45 years later, Elvin Bishop still making incredible music. In fact, some of the best of his career. And that one was just released. That's off the 100 Years of Blues album. It's kind of a front porch throwback sound. And Charlie Musselwhite, again, another legend. Elvin is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Blues Hall of Fame. Charlie, of course, also in the Blues Hall of Fame. And we now have, as I promised, Mr. Elvin Bishop himself joining us once again on this program. Elvin, how are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing fine. And I got to say, I keep getting more and more impressed every time I see an Elvin Bishop record come out.
Well, you're too kind, too kind.
Big Fun Trio was the last time. Something Smells Funky around here that we had you on the show. So that was just a couple years ago, also on Alligator. But this one is unique. This one has a throwback sound. And as I understand, you and Charlie Musselwhite have been friends since the late 60s. Why did it take so long to get you guys together in the studio?
I don't know. It's kind of weird, ain't it?
It is.
It was just a matter that our paths didn't cross that much, although we've both been very active the whole time. We've done a few things together, but I think what really kicked us into wanting to do this album together was when I had him sit in on this tune that we wrote together called 100 Years of Blues, and I did it on one of the Big Fun Trio records.
Mm-hmm.
And it just went so good. And he's a great guy to get along with and hang out with, and the playing is just so automatic because we have such similar backgrounds. You know, we've been through a lot of the same experiences, so
right.
We just fell together real easy.
Wow. Now this album is mostly the two of you. You do have Kid playing upright bass on some, and Bob Welch from the Big Fun Trio is also with you. Bob, of course, he's guitar with no, he's a cajon on the last album, and drums, percussion.
No, that's Willie Jordan.
Okay.
Bob plays Bob Welch's a hell of a musician. He plays both guitar and piano really, really well. So he's a great guy to have on a little session like this. Charlie and I we sort of naturally fell into playing, like when we first started listening to blues, it was actually before we got to Chicago. And the Chicago Blues was the first place where they started using drums on blues. And it hadn't fallen at that time into the formula that it is now of the bass and the drums, and it's more of a down south type of sound, I think.
Okay. How has blues changed in your opinion? You're a rock and roller as well. You were well known for Juke Joint Jump, Strutting My Stuff, a lot of great albums. Fooled Around and Fell in Love, which was a pop hit. You've had all these different styles, but you've always at your roots been a blues artist. How have you seen the evolution of blues to this new century?
Well, I started out listening to blues that all my ear could handle. There was nobody musical in my family. I didn't know any musicians. I just loved the sound of blues, and all my ear could really handle was like one guy with a guitar, like Lightnin' Hopkins or John Lee Hooker and like that. And when I first heard B.B. King, it sounded like jazz to me because of all the horns and everything.
Right.
And but I've always appreciated it all, and I've always played as much blues as people would put up with, you know. And I started out with the Butterfield Blues Band. That
right.
was kind of like what was happening with them, and that was great. After that, in the 70s, 80s, the general audience didn't really want to hear that much blues, it didn't seem like. So I'd sneak a couple in every show, but you know, I'm a roots guy. I'm from Oklahoma, and that's kind of like a crossroad. It's where a lot of different kinds of music mixed up, like country and blues and gospel and like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it all. So when Southern rock came along, that's basically what that amounted to, you know. It was just a mixture of that kind of stuff. And that's how rock came into play too, you know.
Right.
But I like it all, you know. The Southern rock thing was the only officially sanctioned type of music that they could comfortably stuff my ass into, you know. As far as commercial, you know,
right,
play goes. So there's never been, all the time before and after that, I've been just for people that like blues, pretty much, you know.
One of my favorite live albums is Raised in Hell. You put that out in the late 70s. And another thing that you tied in with, and sadly we just lost him, my good friend Charlie Daniels. I've known him for about 40 years, and you played on a lot of the volunteer jams with Charlie. And another good old boy, good soul, good human being. And I was just, you know, because of the fact we just lost him, any special memories of the many times you worked with him?
Oh, we had a lot of good jam sessions, you know. People are always asking me, that was kind of rough what Charlie said about you, about not being good looking and everything. I said, well, you know, in the first place, the truth hurts. In the second place, he's way too big to argue with, you know. So I just let him go ahead and say what he wanted to.
And for the listeners, there's that line, they say, ain't good looking, but he sure can play. And was the South going to do it again? Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. What a great line. Go ahead.
He played with me on this tune I recorded called Fishing 100 years ago on Capricorn. And I remember at the session he was sawing on that fiddle and he got really into it. He was sitting on one of these like metal folding chairs.
Uh-huh.
And he got to rocking so good that the chair collapsed.
Oh.
Just in the sight of him going down with that fiddle in his hand, breaking my mind.
He was a good man, I tell you. I appreciate you sharing that with us, Elvin. You also mentioned in your most recent comment here, you mentioned the Butterfield Blues Band. And, of course, we're right outside of Chicago. We are like 30 miles from the Loop. So blues in Chicago is a big, big thing for us. And I've got to ask you, this album, this 100 Years of Blues album with Charlie Musselwhite, reminded me so much of the pairing of Paul Butterfield and Michael Bloomfield. And, of course, that was your roots. Is this album kind of like coming home for you?
Well, like I said, it goes back before that even, but in my mind. But it's Charlie just picked out a half dozen tunes he wanted to do, and I picked out a half dozen. We did the best we could on the other guy's tunes, and it just all went real easy and just fell right together. I don't think we did more than two takes on anything.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's a time of blues. It was before, when I first got to Chicago in 1960, blues was a little different than it is now. It was before that hard, desperate edge got into blues in Chicago, you know, because for all the gangs and drugs and everything.
Right.
And it was, just kind of a mellower thing. But that's kind of where it goes back to in my mind.
So we're talking like the earlier Chess Records stuff.
That and even before that, yeah.
Okay. I remember Steve Miller talking about being too young to go into a lot of the blues clubs, so he would sit on the curbs outside of the clubs and listen to the guys play. When you first came here, was that a common scene? Did we see a lot of street players just hanging out to the clubs? Because some of those clubs were in rough neighborhoods.
Yeah, you didn't see too many white people in those clubs because it was pretty still. This was way before civil rights and things were still pretty separate, even in at more advanced places like Chicago. But there were guys playing on the street that made a living, like this guy Arvella Gray, who was a great guitar player and gospel singer in Chicago. I remember getting kicked out of a couple of clubs. I was only like 17 when I first got there, 16 or 17. And I went to a Magic Sam concert one time, and it was at a big, like a union hall or something like that. And I remember I got kicked out three times at the same concert, and I kept going around back and sneaking back in. And after the third time, finally Magic Sam kind of noticed that the problem I was having. He said, "Hey, come on, hang out in the dressing room. They won't bother you there." You know?
Wow. Let's let's play a song. Speaking of Chicagoland and great guitar players and the old days, let's do Southside Slide. Is there a story behind this one? Is that one of yours or is that one of Charlie's?
It's one of mine. It's just sort of the feeling. I just lay back and get kind of feeling kind of dreamy and think about the days, and I'd listen to all these great musicians playing. It's just sort of the feeling that it brought out of me.
All right. This is off the new album, 100 Years of Blues, Southside Slide. Elvin Bishop joining us again on the other side. Check it out. Taste of Sweet Home Chicago, Southside Blues, or Southside Slide. That is Elvin Bishop off 100 Years of Blues, brand new album from Alligator Records, the label that a young upstart named Bruce Iglauer started because he couldn't get enough Hound Dog Taylor music. So he put it out himself, and the rest is history 50 years later. I want to ask you one thing about guitar, and then I want to talk a little about Alligator. You've been playing Gibsons almost forever.
Yeah.
What got you into Gibsons, and do you still have Red Dog?
I do. I have what I call Red Dog. It's a 1959 Gibson ES-335, and the first one I got from a guy named Lewis Myers, who's a great blues guitar player.
Chicago guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I trade. At the time, I was playing a Telecaster, and I wasn't really happy with it because it seemed like every time I broke a lot of strings on it, and it was a big hassle, you know, trying to change it in the middle of shows and stuff. And I told Lewis about it, and he said, you know, you're just square as a pool table and twice as green. You don't know what you're doing. If I had it, I wouldn't break any strings. I said, well, I sure like that Gibson you got there. So we were both drinking a little bit, and we decided to trade. We traded guitars. And over the next week till I saw him the next time, I just fell in love with the Gibson. It just has such a great sound.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes back in. He says, man, we got to trade back. And if I'd had any decency about me, I would have traded back. But I said, no, man, I love this guitar. He said, well, every time I hit this thing, I break two or three strings. I don't know what the hell is wrong with it. I said, you know, I told you, you know. But
so you kept his guitar?
Yeah.
How'd that go over?
Well, I don't know. In those days, our feeling was that every 5 years, either the airlines or the thieves would get your guitar, so you just had to be ready for that.
Okay.
And it happened to me two or three times, where you just go to the pawn shop and buy another one. They're pretty reasonably priced then, you know?
Right, right.
And there were a lot of them, but now it's worth so much, I'm scared to take it out of you know, away from home.
Now, how did it get the name Red Dog? BB had Lucille. You've got Red Dog. How did Red Dog come about?
I think I named it after this roadie that worked with the Allman Brothers.
Oh.
His nickname was Red Dog. So I just named it Red Dog and been that way ever since.
All right. Let's talk about Alligator. You were with Alligator in the 80s, 88 to 98, and then you left for a while, and then you are back now. You came back in 2014. You've had a collection of about 9, 10 albums with the label. Tell me a little bit about why you came back to Alligator, why you left in the first place, and what it is about that label that has made them so successful.
Bruce Iglauer has got a little formula there that works for an independent blues label. I was amazed because when I left, which I don't remember why that happened, and I came back, you know, many years later, it was all the same guys in the same jobs. And this indicates to me that Bruce had it all set up right, and they're all real good guys and real good at their jobs. So it's kind of like that with organizations. You play on the road with bands and stuff, you know, and you have your sound checks and different interactions, and you'll find that if the lowest, from the lowest roadie up to the manager, up to the band leader, everybody is just great, and a nice person, or they're all assholes, you know?
Right.
It seems to permeate the whole organization, you know, and Alligator's got a good one.
So it's the family kind of groove that they kept you, brought you back.
I guess so. Yeah. Okay.
Now you had that with Capricorn as well, didn't you? Because that was a label that seemed to keep the same family together, so to speak.
Yeah, they did. And I don't know what happened. At some point, it just kind of all collapsed, I think. But there were some forward-thinking people there, you know?
Yeah, there was. Those guys, man, all the way up until it fell apart, they had some incredible artists, and they seemed to take a gamble on stuff. They believed, that, like Bruce, they kind of followed what they felt was good music and hoped the public would follow them. And you had some great albums. You had some great touring mates back then, and when you left Capricorn, you came to Alligator, And now you're back to Alligator, so I'm really glad to see that, because the quality of the stuff you're putting out now is as good or better than anything you've ever done. And at this point in your career, in your life, Alvin, what keeps you going as much as you are? I mean, you've released 4 albums now in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I don't know. It is true. Usually artists, you know, they hit a certain age, the late 30s or the 40s or 50 or something like that, and they kind of
Slow down?
Seem like they, yeah, but slow down or just start relying on their old stuff, you know. This was something that, this might be why me and Charlie got back together. One reason is I just, out of the blue one day, just called him and I said, I really admire you for, because you haven't stopped progressing.
Mm-hmm.
And your music is living and growing. And I don't know, just lucky, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I love the music, and I keep wondering, well, hell, when's it going to dry up, you know? But then every once in a while, a good idea will strike me, and I, hey, I got a new tune. How about that?
Right. And sometimes it seems like you pull them right out of the headlines, like with What the Hell, a new song off the new album.
Yeah. I'm not a very political guy, and I've got written maybe a couple hundred songs, and you could look through the whole bunch and write a political one in there. But I don't know. Just the
comes a time.
Kind of.
Comes the time.
Please, that one out of me, yeah.
Well, let's play that for my listeners, and we'll be back with Elvin after this. This is another brand-new track. Again, this is off the 100 Years of Blues, and we'll talk about that album title in just a minute. Along with Charlie Musselwhite, this is Elvin, and What the Hell is Going On?
Country can't stand the other half. I wanna know, why can't we halfway get along? Ah, people, people, what the hell is going on? Not a goddamn thing. I wanna know, how can 4 years seem so long? Yeah, Lord have mercy. What the hell is going on?
Kind of summing it up well as we get nearer and nearer to the big day. What the hell? And sometimes I think we all are just scratching our heads and saying the same thing. Elvin, tell me about when that song was written.
Well, I originally wrote it with different lyrics in the early 2000s after the Twin Towers incident, you know, when the terrorists bombed New York City. And it was basically about that, and then how crazy all the different headlines were. And it was just a case of watching too much CNN, I think. But anyway, after that, I just nothing came up that that got me that stirred up, you know. So I just left it alone until the current situation we got going on. It became evident how heavy it was. I just said, "Well, hell, I'll write some more words."
Like how has 4 years seemed so long? I love that line.
Get out and vote.
Yeah, if you haven't done so, do that. Do what he says. Get out there and vote. I mentioned the title a couple of times, 100 Years of Blues, new album on Alligator Records. And there's a story as to why you guys named that. Share that with my listeners.
I don't remember. But it suits the situation because we've both been at it for well over 50 years.
Okay.
So, add it up.
All right. So of the different incarnations of the Elvin Bishop Group and the Elvin Bishop Band and the different side guys you've worked with, why is this you seem to be very comfortable with the trio format. Why is that?
I don't know. I guess I'm kind of a democratic type of guy. You know, I've always been really lucky and had great musicians in my bands, and I'd like to be fair with them and think back to a time when I was a so-called sideman, and you know, it makes a fella good to be able to do something of his own and stand out a little bit, even if it's on somebody else's the headliner, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it got to the place where I think I was just kind of overdoing that, and I said, "Damn, you know, I get tired of standing around with the." And my thumb up my, what you call it, and listen to somebody else play a solo. I put myself in the trio situation, and there's no place to hide, and there's no time to take a break, and you just got to be honored all the time. So I kind of enjoyed that.
How did you come to work with Bob Welsh? And will the trio format, will Big Fun Trio come back together for the next album, or are you on a new path now?
I don't know. Who knows if we're going to have any more gigs? Look what's going on. plenty of time to think about it, though, that's for sure.
Right. How have you been filling your shelter-at-home time the last 7-8 months?
Oh, I'm lucky. I have a real nice wife and a nice daughter. She doesn't live at home, but we're in good communications. And I got a big garden. And I do all that. I raise all as much of our food as I can. Like I told that one guy one time, if I could find a pork chop tree, I wouldn't have to go to the store at all. But I raise all the vegetables, and my wife is Japanese American, so I raise not only the tomatoes and green beans and all the American stuff, but a lot of Japanese vegetables too.
Okay.
And then I do the home canning, so. Yeah, I got plenty to keep me busy.
Are you the cook of the family as well?
I try to do my share. She's a better cook than I am, but I duck in there and take the pressure off every now and then.
All right. Again, we're talking about a time when nobody really knows what's going on, but as I look at your profile on Alligator's website, which for the listeners is alligator.com, you can find all their artists there, including independent pages on each, and Elvin's got his. And I'm looking, it seems they and maybe you are optimistic because I'm seeing live dates booked for January, April, and October already. So are you comfortable heading back on the road at this point?
Well, it'll depend on what's going on. I don't think I'm going to go anywhere until they get a decent vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, everybody's trying to be optimistic on this thing. You know, the frustrating thing about it is that there's no light at the end of the tunnel. You don't have any specific thing or time to look forward to. You could say, well, if we can make it till then, we'll be all right, because nobody really knows what's going to happen. So the people that are running the gigs, the promoters, they never say, we're going to cancel this gig. They say, we're going to reschedule.
Right.
But when that'll be, God only knows. They have some dates for some things, but I think that's all kind of provisional and depends on what the hell is going on at the time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked with Charlie? Are you guys going to go out together and promote this album? Are you going to be doing stuff with the Big Fun Trio? Do you know yet what your format will be as far as your live bands?
No, we don't know yet. That'll come up. You know, a lot of that is not up to us. It depends on what the demand is. The people who are putting up the money for the gigs are going to have their taste and their opinion for what they want to hear, you know.
So right.
They'll have some input into that. And we'll just hope for the best and hope to see people as soon as possible.
Well, this album, 100 Years of Blues, seems to, when you listen to it, you can feel the good vibe that was there when you were recording this album. Do you see another part two with Charlie? After all these years of knowing each other and finally getting together, it sounds like the dynamic, the chemistry was perfect for this. Will there be a part two of 100 Years of Blues?
I wouldn't be surprised. We're already kind of trying to write a couple tunes and thinking of songs that would be good for us to do. And well, Charlie and I stay in good touch, and we talk on the phone quite a bit, and I've kind of got to know him much better than I used to. So, I'd say that's a good possibility.
All right. If you had your way and you could team up with any blues artist, living or dead, like you have with Charlie, to do an album and collaborate, who would that artist be? Who was your dream collaborator?
Oh, I don't know. There's lots of guys that I enjoyed playing with. I loved playing with Clifton Chenier. He had such a great feeling. I loved Albert Collins. And there's just so many. You know, boy, blues is like human beings. There's a lot of different beautiful ones, you know?
Right, right. Going back to the album once again, before we say goodbye, let's play another song. What would you like to play? And I'm going to close the show with 100 Years of Blues. So anything that we haven't played, and then we're going to say goodbye on the other side, close out with websites and any final thoughts, and then we'll close with 100 Years of Blues. But in the meantime, what's a favorite of yours off the album?
I like West Helena Blues that Charlie sings.
Okay, let's do that. This is West Helena Blues. Again, it's off the 100 Years of Blues album. And that came out when? Was it just out this last week or two?
Hadn't been long, a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and it's on Alligator Records. You can keep up with that at alligator.com. And we're going to play it and say goodbye to Elvin on the other side. Stay with us.
I got a woman that I'm loving, lives in West Helena, Arkansas. She buys me long-toed shoes, my job. She gets paid every Friday, along about 11 o'clock. She gets paid every Friday.
7 o'clock. Yeah, and then on from Monday morning, you know the whole town wheel and rock. Helena, it ain't nothing but a murderer's home. Yeah, they tell me West Helena, it ain't nothing but a murderer's home. If it's a graveyard, that's where I'll be before long.
Tasty Blues, some great harmonica there, harp master, Mr. Charlie Musselwhite handling lead vocals, Elvin Bishop playing some git fiddle there. It's an old Roosevelt Sykes song. I take it that was right. One of Charlie's choices, right?
Yeah, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
There's a quiz for you. Do you know what Brown Mule is?
Brown Mule. It sounds like something.
She buys me long-toed shoes and keeps that brown mule in my jaw.
Oh, Chew. It's Chew.
Yeah, you got it. You're one of the few guys I know that I used to. It's like, it's kind of like hash compared to a regular weed, you know. It's like a solid piece, like a candy bar shaped like.
Wow.
I used to chew that when I worked in the oil fields in Texas because they don't let you smoke in the oil fields.
Right, right. I remember when Charlie Daniels used to endorse Skoal and a bunch of other kinds of tobacco chew.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Back in the day. Wow. Again, alligator.com is where you can find all the information you need on this new album, 100 Years of Blues. Is there a dedicated, besides the Alligator link, is there a dedicated Elvin Bishop website that you can give us?
Elvin Bishop Music. Yeah.
Okay. We can keep up with everything and hopefully tours that are going to be going on and things like that.
We hope. Yeah.
All right. Elvin, any final thoughts or comments before we play the title track and say goodbye to you here? Anything we haven't covered you'd like to talk about?
No, it's all good. I want to thank you for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
I always appreciate having some time with you, and I hope we can do it again on the next album, and give my best to Charlie, and I hope to see you when you get on the road. Be sure to put Chicago on the map for us, all right?
Okay, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. Elvin Bishop, what a great guest. What a legendary performer. And I've had the good fortune of interviewing him a number of times over the years, going back and twice now in 3 years. So I'm on a roll. This is 100 Years of Blues title track, Alligator Records, Charlie and Elvin. We'll be back with part two of the show in just a few. Stay with us.
I'm from Oklahoma. This is my pal Charlie. Now he's from Tennessee. We're here with you all this evening, and damn glad to be. We've been playing this music a long time. I'll tell you folks the truth. You know, between the two of us, looking at 100 years of blue. We got our education in Chicago way back in the 1960s, hanging out in those clubs, chasing girls and playing blues and drinking all kinds of whiskey, running all over the South Side.
Yeah, man, down at 43rd and Vincennes.
Yeah, Peppers. And the West Side, too.
Oh, yeah, Lake and Kedzie.
Wolf's Hangout, Silvio's. Man, think about it. It's been 100 years of blue.
Knew all the cats. We knew Wolf and Muddy and Sonny Boy too. We had a mighty fine time. You know, we were just, well, breaking all the rules. We're glad you came to see us. And it's really good to see you all. You know, we're mighty glad to be here, and actually we're lucky to be anywhere at all. Well, if you like what you hear and you think we've paid our dues, I just want you to remember, we bring you 100 years of the blues. I ain't lying.
Yeah, you know they tell me, Charlie, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I guess it is true. We've been around since the Dead Sea was sick. I guess we better keep on just doing what we do. Lord have mercy. It's been 100 years of blue. Thank you.
100 Years of Blues. Mr. Elvin Bishop sitting in with another legend, Charlie Musselwhite. Again, Elvin has been making music since the mid-60s when he started out with the Butterfield Blues Band right here in Chicago. As he mentioned, coming to the Windy City around age 16, 17, sitting outside those blues clubs and sneaking in when he could. And that's the same story that Steve Miller gave me many years ago. A lot of these guys that that came to Chicago during the Chess heyday used to try to sit outside or sit in those blues clubs and soak up the atmosphere, soak up the mojo. And they'd always be getting kicked out. But a lot of the blues players just let them slide in through the back door. So many great stories of blues artists that were doing that and passing along the blues gene, so to speak. All right, Charlie Musselwhite is a Blues Hall of Famer. He's been around forever. Elvin Bishop, a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, a Blues Hall of Famer. And I threw out there that there was a story behind the 100 Years of Blues title. And actually, it's pretty simple. Between the two of them, they have been playing blues over 100 years if you total up their careers. And that's kind of where the title came from. Lots of great harmonica and picking. If you're familiar with Elvin Bishop, I do endorse this one because it's one of my favorite of his catalog. And you just never can go wrong with Charlie Musselwhite. He is truly the master. So good stuff there. Alligator Records, alligator.com. Elvin Bishop Music.com is where you can find out more information.